Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. One confirmed dead, nine missing at Longview chemical tank explosion. And Moscow Council discusses housing. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Officials in Longview, Washington say the likely death toll from the chemical tank rupture yesterday is 11 after one person who was injured died. Rescuers found one body after the giant tank of what is known as white liquor imploded at the Nippon Dynawave Packaging Pulp and Paper Mill, and nine people remained missing as of this afternoon. The spokesman review reported white liquor is a mix of sodium hydroxide, sodium sulfide, and disodium carbonate used to make paper. The Columbian newspaper in Vancouver reports officials say there is no hope of finding more survivors. Eight people, including one responding firefighter, were injured. Officials determined today that the tank contained less of the highly caustic liquid than originally thought and said they believe the ruptured tank is stable enough to proceed with a slow and methodical search for the bodies of the missing. At an evening press conference, Longview Mayor Eric Halverson said, "As our emergency teams continue their tireless work here, our community has entered a time of profound tragedy and deep mourning on behalf of the entire city of Longview. Our hearts are heavy. Our deepest prayers go out to the families, the loved ones, the co-workers who are experiencing unimaginable grief and pain today." Department of Ecology records show Nippon Dynawave Packaging employs 550 people, of which 450 work at the liquid packaging plant facility. The pulp facility produces 280,000 tons of bleached liquid packaging paperboard, wet lap, and slush pulp each year. The spokesman review reports the tank was 60% full when the implosion occurred, and after the implosion, 90,000 gallons remained in the 900,000-gallon tank. Crews were developing a plan to stabilize the tank before resuming recovery efforts today. The spilled liquid chemicals remain on site. Governor Bob Ferguson says he has ordered the National Guard to be on alert. Ferguson said he would be traveling to Longview to meet with first responders and officials. According to the spokesman review, a spokesperson for Peace Health St. John Medical Center in Longview said the hospital evaluated nine patients impacted by the pulp facility explosion as of yesterday afternoon. The spokesperson said healthcare workers transferred four of those to the Legacy Burn Center in Portland, discharged three of them, treated one who is in fair condition, and one had died. At a special meeting yesterday, the Moscow City Council discussed housing issues. City Administrator Bill Belknap said the average Moscow home value last year was $467,000, which council member Sage Makedich, a real estate agent, indicated was double what they were a decade ago. Belknap also said the average monthly rent is $1,400. According to the Daily News, council members recognized community land trusts, specifically Hills and Rivers Housing Trust, as models with local success in building affordable homes. Under that model, a land trust owns the land, only selling the house and leasing the land it's built on for a nominal fee. The council returned to a two-year ongoing discussion on developing a housing authority, which would be a quasi-governmental organization created to provide affordable housing for low-income residents. A long-running concern is the tight city budget that has forced it to leave eight staff positions vacant. Mayor Haley Lewis asked the council how much staff time they would want to develop a housing authority. Council members asked advocates for more details on how housing authorities might be funded and staffed. Council members floated other ideas for managing housing affordability in the community. Council member Evan Holmes advocated for closer coordination with Latah County. Council member Scott Sumner, who is a civil engineer, suggested expediting the developer permit approval process and changing restrictions on parking to allow for more homes. The Pullman School Board will hold a public hearing tonight on a proposal to extend the 2025 to 2026 general fund budget. Trustees say the district needs $1.1 million to cover the costs of running START and special education. The proposed revision would increase the appropriated budget from $44.5 million to $45.6 million. The hearing will be held at 6:30 p.m. today at the Pullman High School Community Room located at 510 Northwest Greyhound Way.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
The Moscow Food Co-op encourages the daily use of reusable bags, reusable produce bags, and reusable bulk containers in efforts to minimize the amount of single-use products entering the waste stream through the Change for Good Bag Token Project.
All the vegetables will respond to you.
I jump up and down and hope you toss me a carrot.
Here's another way to help KRFP, one bag at a time.
You have three choices for where your bag tokens go when you visit with your co-op cashier during the months of April, May, and June. And your community radio station, KRFP, is one of them.
Bag tokens.
The Moscow Food Co-op.
I'm red as a beet.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night, so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You can listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight Back.
We're still here.
Radio.
Fight
Back.
Fight
Back.
Residents in Southern Oregon will soon be tapping into energy created by the state's first floating solar panels as part of the state's community solar program. Over 1,700 panels on floating platforms atop a Medford Irrigation District reservoir will generate power to cut costs for the district, the city, and about 60 homes in Jackson County. Julie O'Shea with Farmers Conservation Alliance says the project has many benefits.
It's helping people save money on energy bills, which which is so critical right now, and at the same time, help generate revenue for the irrigation district to help their modernization goals to be able to be more drought resilient.
O'Shea says the floating solar panels will prevent evaporation from the reservoir, helping save more than 1.5 million gallons of water per year. She adds the panels are in their final phase of testing and should be fully operational next month. Kyle Petrosini is with Energy Trust of Oregon, one of the administrators of Oregon's community solar program. He says there are many community solar projects across the state that people can subscribe to online, explaining customers pay for a subscription and get credits on their utility bill, lowering overall costs.
It really enables access to the benefits of solar power for renters, or maybe somebody doesn't have the means to invest in their own rooftop solar.
Petrosini adds that low-income subscribers can get discounted subscription rates and can save up to 40% on their power bills. He adds there are several other similar projects being considered in the Rogue Valley and other parts of Oregon. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The U.S. Forest Service responded this month to a request from Idaho Outfitters by approving the use of gasoline-powered chainsaws in the Frank Church River of No Return Federal Wilderness Area for the first time in more than 50 years. The Forest Service's minimum requirement analysis allows selected outfitters and contractors to use chainsaws between January 1st and August 1st over the next 3 years to clear downed trees from 61 trails covering 542 miles. The Forest Service surveyed the Frank Church Wilderness by helicopter last year. They flew over 150 miles out of 542 miles of trails and found between 80,000 and 110,000 downed trees. Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association President Eric Weiseth said there are trails with significant blowdowns. Weiseth said, if people cannot experience wilderness, cannot get there and fall in love with it, they will not be advocates for these places in the future. That is how we build the coalition to protect these places down the road. If no one can ever get there, that coalition is going to dwindle over time. The passion won't be there. Under the 1964 Federal Wilderness Act, Congress prohibited the use of motorized vehicles and mechanized tools on pristine lands that comprise the National Wilderness Preservation System. For more than 60 years, workers have used manual crosscut saws and other manual tools to manage wilderness trails. Wilderness Watch attorney Dana Johnson told the Lewiston Tribune the decision to allow chainsaws appears to have violated Forest Service public participation policies. Johnson said it seems the Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association and Forest Service have been working on this for quite some time without notifying the public, without giving people the opportunity to comment and apply some scrutiny to the analysis. My concerns are heightened in this case because it's a commercial interest that seems to be making deals with the Forest Service behind the scenes. If we saw this proposal first without knowing there would be a national authorization, we would still be shocked. It's a lot of motorized use in wilderness. We are doubly shocked they are making such a significant decision outside the bounds of the National Environmental Policy Act as well. Johnson expressed concern that the new Forest Service wilderness policy for the Frank Church will spread beyond that particular wilderness area. She said, I really think this is a camel's nose under the tent, and we are probably going to be seeing many more of these requests and authorizations. Weiseth of the Outfitters Association said if the trails are not cleared, it will decrease the access to solitude and visitors will be more likely to pioneer new trails around blockages. He said, Central Idaho Wilderness Act of 1980 requires that trails be cleared annually, and the House report in the Congressional Record of the legislation indicates the committee has no opposition to the use of chainsaws and mechanized tools to clear trails. Johnson says Congress could allocate more funding and resurrect the wilderness program to pay for people to clear the trails with hand tools. She said, I think when people are out and see these places and how unique they are connected to them and want to protect them, but it's sort of a circular argument to say the answer to getting more people out to these places that are unique and spectacular is to degrade them. The Idaho Conservation League seemed more compromising. John Robison, the Public Lands and Wildlife Director for the Idaho Conservation League, said, our preferred option would be that Congress provide the necessary funding and staff to maintain wilderness trails using traditional tools. That said, given the dramatic reduction in Forest Service staffing, we can live with the limited use of chainsaws on this specific list of trails for a defined period of time. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. It will be partly cloudy tonight with a low around 50. 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. Chance of showers between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Increasing clouds, high 84. 70% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm before midnight Thursday night. Mostly cloudy, low 51. Up to a quarter inch of rain possible, except higher amounts in thunderstorms. Mostly sunny on Friday, high 69, light northwest wind becoming west 10 to 15 in the morning, gusts up to 25. Friday night, mostly cloudy, low 44, and west winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. 20% chance of showers on Saturday, mostly cloudy, high 59. Currently 70 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming that you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Coming up, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Lockdown Mosh Pits on at 7:30, and at 8:30, music begins in earnest with Arlene with Grateful Dead Through the Decades. At 10 o'clock, we'll have the syndicated show of Brazilian music called Bossa Brasil. Have a good night.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.